Chapter 18. The Collusion, the Contest, and the Cage. Thursday, June the 6th, 1191. Marian left the castle on the pretense of a quick ride. The stable boy hadn't questioned her. There were so many preparations going on that she was sure no one would miss her. The guards, whom the sheriff had assigned as her escort, were easy enough to lose, but she knew they would report her absence if she was not back by sundown. She rode quickly into the woods. It was a warm day, though puddles from the storm lay like ponds on the forest floor. This had not been her original plan. Truth be told, she had expected the outlaw to appear at her window after she'd placed the white roses there. He would appear, and they would talk passionately all night about how to free the captive lady. But perhaps only the rogues in stories could climb the sides of stone towers. Well, if he couldn't make it to her, she would have to make it to him. That being said, now she was in the woods, she didn't quite know what to do next. Should she shout out, "Oh, what is a maiden all alone in the woods to do with this heavy purse of gold?" Maybe she should just call for Robin by name. Well, that wouldn't look suspicious at all.
"Are you lost, miss?"
asked a gruff, deep voice from behind the trees. She spun her mare around on the damp dirt track and saw a giant of a man. His beard was black, his face ruddy, and his eyes were red from crying?
Not lost, exactly. I'm looking for someone."
Marian hesitated, but she couldn't stop herself.
"Are you okay?"
"Oh, not really,"
said the large man, blowing his nose on his green sleeve. Marian noticed the dark red hood behind his neck.
"We had a bit of a tragedy a few days back. I keep remembering it, you see, and, well, I don't like to blub in front of the men."
"I see," said Marian kindly. "Well, I am sorry for your ill fortune." Of all the obstacles she thought she'd face today, a crying giant wasn't one of them.
"Thank you, my lady. I've always been this way. The smallest things set me off. My brothers used to call me Little Baby John."
Marian found it very difficult to imagine this tower of a man as a baby. The large man rallied himself.
"I'm sorry. I don't mean to carry on like this. Can I be of some assistance?"
Marian took a breath. "I'm looking for Robin Hood." There was no time for beating around the bush, and she was quite keen to change the subject away from the giant's cause of anguish. To her dismay, fresh tears filled the giant's eyes again.
"I'm not sure there is a Robin Hood anymore, miss."
Marian's heart leapt. "He can't be dead. Sir Guy wouldn't have shut up about it if he'd actually killed him," she said, as much to herself as she did to Little John.
"Sir Guy!"
Quick as a flash, the giant's hands were suddenly on the reins of her horse.
"You would do well to keep that name off your tongue when you're around me."
He pulled the beast's head down with incredible strength. Marian struggled to keep her nerve. "Look, I know all about the raid. I know about the woman in chains. And if he wants to save her, I've created an opportunity." There was a long pause as John contemplated her words. "And," she added, "if all goes well, you can kill that disgrace of a knight yourself." The broad hands slackened on the reins. John led them through the trees, his massive strides causing the mare to trot. Eventually they made it to a clearing, where about 20 men in green tunics and red hoods were milling about. They looked anything but merry. A younger man ran up to them.
"David, what's wrong?" asked John.
"Oh, John, two more men have gone. They took a share of what we had left," said David.
"Where is he?"
"He's still by the grave."
"Has he taken any food?"
David shook his head.
"Water?"
David shook his head again. John patted the lad on the shoulder.
"Thanks for keeping an eye on him."
John held out a hand to Marian as she dismounted. Being around commoners had always made her feel uncomfortable. Not out of fear, but at the sheer unfairness of it all. The eyes of every man followed her. She got the impression they didn't get many visitors here, especially not women.
She didn't know if it was lust or envy or simply that maybe they'd never seen someone so clean. She was glad when it was just her and John again. They walked in silence, the trees overhead getting thicker, the whole wood getting darker. And then there was Robin Hood, if you could still call him that. He was on his knees, his green tunic and red hood cast aside. She couldn't help but notice how the muscles on his back seemed ready to burst out of his skin at any minute. He was knelt before a small mound of earth. Over it, dried wood had been erected in a pattern that reminded Marian of a spiderweb covered in dew. The sticks were tied together with twine and decorated with feathers and bluish-green beads. Purple smoke rose from a fire at its side. Marian looked to John for guidance, but the big man had none. She went to take a step forward, but a pricking on the back of her neck made her stop. She felt like a rabbit sensing a trap or a sinner stepping onto sacred ground. She wouldn't impose herself uninvited. Instead, she leant forward, hoping that he would sense her waiting. That's when she heard the muttering, his voice soft and quiet. She couldn't make out what he was saying. As usual, her curiosity got the better of her and she stepped forward. As she did so, the fire next to Robin flashed and his muttering stopped. Robin slowly got to his feet. He turned to face her. He looked terrible, his skin ashen, his face gaunt. "I have spent the last 4 days praying," Adam croaked. "What for?" asked Marian. "A miracle at first, then an end, and finally a sign. Do you have any of these for me, Lady Marian?" Marian looked into those storm-grey eyes. "No, but I have a plan." She began to remove her blue silk dress. Prince John loved pageantry. When the royal standard was raised above him and trumpets proclaimed his every movement, he felt like he truly was king. The crowds that gathered to watch the contests were unlike anything the city of Nottingham had ever seen. Well, people would always gather to watch the nobles and knights have a joust or a melee, but that day, thousands flocked to the field for the archery contest. It was the first time in British history, or so the mummers said, that commoners and noblemen would be competing against each other. So many archers had shown up to compete that a culling process had to quickly been implemented. Each competitor would have to hit a target at 50 yards. This eliminated a few untalented lads who were in it for a laugh and several older soldiers looking for a last whiff of glory. Even with this measure, there were still 84 eligible sharp shooters. Prince John watched with glee from the royal box, joined by the maid Marian and the Sheriff of Nottingham. "I don't see what you are so worried about," John said to the sheriff. "It's all going swimmingly."
"Yes, sir," said the sheriff with a pained smile. "It appears that my fears were unfounded." He was on edge. He felt like a guard dog that had sniffed an invisible intruder. As the groups of 12 assembled on the shooting line, he scanned every face, studied every motion. But as he had never even clapped eyes on Robin Hood or his merry men, this was beginning to feel like a fruitless exercise. Sir Guy was in the contest, having only barely made it through the culling process, but he was eliminated in the first group of 12 and quickly went to drown his sorrows with the crowds, while the second group of 12 took up their marks. The arrows flew for a good hour. Eventually, they were down to just 5. A comely knight from London, Sir Sampson, a local hunter, Trevor, a young squire who looked just as surprised as anyone else to have made it this far, Henry, a dark-skinned, grey-eyed Moor dressed in dark blue silks, Atik, and finally a Frenchman who was booed by one and all. There was one final target. The competitor who hit their arrow closest to the centre would be declared the champion.
The pressure finally got to young Henry. His arrow went soaring way over the mark, much to the crowd's amusement. Sir Sampson and the Frenchman both hit true, but outside the centre circle. It looked as if the hunter Trevor would take the win, his arrow the only one to have pierced the bullseye. There was just one man left to take his shot. The Moor, Atik, gave a smile and a courteous bow to the hunter before notching his arrow. The tension was palpable as the crowd held its breath. Atik released the shaft. The arrow went hurtling towards the bullseye, splitting Trevor's bolt clean in two. The crowd exploded. They rushed the grounds to embrace their champion. Atik was cheered on his way towards the royal box. Adam, despite his grief, couldn't help but smile. He'd been worried that Trevor was going to scupper the plan. He looked up to the royal box and saw the sheriff and the prince for the first time. Did these two men hold his wife captive? The path was blocked suddenly by a swaying Sir Guy of Gisborne. Adam held his breath. This was not the time to avenge Will's murder, though that time would come soon.
"Well done! That was a bloody good shot," slurred the knight, wrapping his arm around Adam and joining the crowd, marching him up to the prince.
"Thank you," said Adam.
He spoke in the accent he hadn't used since his Arabian days.
"You are most gracious. May your death be swift."
Sir Guy's face contorted, not quite sure he'd heard correctly.
"Don't be alarmed, my friend. It is just a blessing from my part of the world. Excuse me."
Adam gently removed the knight's arm from his shoulder, gave him a small nod, and continued at a slightly quicker pace on his way to the prince. Prince John rose to meet his champion, opening his arms wide as he did so. The sheriff and Marian stood beside him. Marian's heart was beating fast. It was all going to plan.
"Atik!"
proclaimed the prince, projecting for the whole crowd to hear.
"You have shot well. While I would have preferred for one of the king's men to be victorious, you are a worthy adversary. Your skill is unmatched, certainly better than any outlaw who hides in the forest, jumping out at unsuspecting maids and setting crops to the torch."
"Thank you, Highness." Adam dropped to one knee. "But you are mistaken. I am a king's man, through and through. I have fought beside your brother Richard in the Holy Land. I am here because of him."
John's expression softened. He lowered his voice.
"You've spoken to my brother? How is he?"
"He speaks very highly of you. He said he has no fear of death, as England would be left in the most capable hands in Christendom."
The prince's face looked almost overcome with emotion.
"Atik, it would be an honour to have you dine by my side tonight."
Adam smiled and bowed low. The flattery had worked.
"Kiss!"
yelled an excited lad from the crowd. He was quickly joined by rather more rowdy calls for the Moor to collect his reward. Adam had quite forgotten this bit. He turned to look at Marian. She had gone quite pink. Adam strode up to her and pulled her close. Marian had been kissed before, by clumsy boys and drunken knights, but this was different. The jeers of the crowds melted away, and a rush of blood filled her lips. Her only complaint was that it was all too brief.
"Thank you, my lady," Adam whispered in her ear. "It's all going very well."
He pulled away, walking back down through the field to prepare for the evening's festivities. The hall was decked out magnificently, as it was every night of the royal visit. The tables were heavy with food, the castle full of merriment. The only difference tonight was that every archer who had competed that day also attended the royal feast, from the commonest peasant to the noblest knight.
The prince sat in the middle of the top table, flanked by the sheriff and the champion Atik. The Lady Marian sat left of the sheriff, and Sir Guy of Gisborne by the champion archer's right. Though the flagons of wine were frequently filled and emptied, only the prince and Sir Guy seemed to be drinking. The latter was downing the lion's share.
"The thing I never understood is that you people have Jesus, but not like we do,"
Sir Guy asked Atik.
"True. We see him as a prophet, a great prophet, second only to Muhammad himself,"
Adam replied politely, sipping from his goblet of water.
"And this Muhammad, is he the one who says you can't drink?"
continued the knight.
"Yes. It was said he thought it could cloud people's judgment."
"Very wise," interjected Marian, craning her neck to join the conversation. "I think many a Christian man could heed that advice."
"I see you also don't drink, Sheriff. You aren't a barbarian convert,"
joked Sir Guy. The sheriff ignored him. He was too busy surveying the hall. Having all of these commoners in his home made him uneasy. They outnumbered his men 3-1.
"Your Highness," said Adam, turning to the prince, "this is my first time in Nottingham. Do all the people of your country love you so?"
The prince chuckled.
"Well, my dear friend, yes, I suppose I am quite popular with the masses. Some even call me the people's prince."
Marian spluttered her water slightly. Everyone stared at her.
Went down the wrong way," she mumbled.
"Not everyone likes the prince,"
blurted Sir Guy. Everyone stared at him. The prince looked embarrassed and not best pleased.
But I would defend him to my death. To my death!"
Sir Guy lifted up his tankard dramatically, his speech slurred.
"I drink to that," said Adam.
Marian laughed. The sheriff narrowed his eyes.
"I believe Sir Guy is referring to the unrest in her forests," said the prince. "As I am sure you know, every great country has those who would do it harm."
Adam nodded.
"Yes, we must protect what is ours."
His storm-grey eyes met the prince's. He did not look away.
Nottingham is a lovely place to live," said Marian quickly. This conversation was in danger of entering uncomfortable territory. "I spent much of my childhood in this castle."
Adam tore his gaze from the prince and gave the maid a warm smile.
"Perhaps you would be gracious enough to give me the grand tour once our feast is done."
"I'd be most obliged," Marian returned his smile. "We could go now, if the prince would permit us. The food was very rich. I think a walk would refresh me."
Marian looked to John.
"Oh, no. Atik, if you leave now, you'll miss the pie. You must try it, Atik, full of every British bird in the land."
Marian and Adam, who had already risen, reluctantly retook their places at table. The sheriff caught the eye of one man in a rough-spun cloak who was watching the top table intensely. The commoner turned away immediately and went back to his meal. This, the sheriff observed, set off an almost imperceptible flutter throughout the room. Like the hound he was, he followed the chain of fervent looks and subtle hand gestures. It went all the way around the hall and back to the top table and to Atik, who appeared deep in conversation with the maid and the prince, but the stranger in the blue silks then tapped his finger on the tabletop. Was it to make a point of conversation? Or something more?
"I love pie," said Sir Guy.
And then, as if the two were somehow related, he turned to Atik.
"I saved Marian once, you know, from the forest."
"Is that so?"
asked Adam politely. The sheriff was staring at him again.
"Yes, from drunken hoodlums,
slurred Sir Guy.
They jumped our carriage. I went back to finish them off.
Yes, yes, we've heard this before, said Marion, getting to her feet. Will you excuse us? Adam followed her lead. Atik hasn't, said the sheriff quietly. Marion and Adam looked at each other. Unless he already knows how it ends. They sat back down. Marion was concerned. The sheriff was the only person more sick of Sir Guy's tale than she was. Why was he asking him to repeat it?
So, I'm there to kill Robin Hood for dishonouring our dear lady here. And to be honest, I was expecting more of a challenge. It turns out this merry band is just a bunch of sad old men and young crippled brats.
Adam bristled, almost indiscernibly, but the sheriff saw it. Sir Guy mimed a crossbow, taking careful aim at some imaginary target.
Easy pickings,
Sir Guy continued.
You're lucky the sun was in my eyes for that first round today, Atik. I would have given you an actual challenge if I'd made it to the final. I must have got three of the bastards before they'd even strung their bows. I prefer moving targets anyway.
You didn't get Robin Hood, though, did you? The sheriff asked Sir Guy, his eyes on Atik, watching for his reaction.
It's getting late. I really should show Atik the castle, said Marion.
The sheriff ignored her.
No, said Sir Guy ruefully. I didn't get Robin Hood. He ran off! The coward! But I did get a thief. He had one of those messed up hands. We aren't as barbaric as you lot. You take the whole hand for thievery. We only take a few fingers for the first offence. He ran at me like a dog, so I put him down like one.
How very noble of you, said Adam. He was smiling, but his shoulders were tense. The sheriff had collected enough taxes in his time to know what restrained fury looked like. You look a little green, Atik. I'm sure you've seen your fair share of bloodshed, asked the sheriff. Adam could feel his heart pounding in his chest, an acidic taste building in his mouth.
Yes, too much, he said quietly.
I can imagine fighting alongside Richard. I think the only time I ever saw a smile peek through His Majesty's black beard was when he was in the middle of a melee, the sheriff laughed.
Yes, your king is a fierce warrior, said Adam flatly. Now, Lady Marion, please do show me the castle.
Red, the prince said, stabbing another morsel of food. Richard's beard is red, not black.
It is red, isn't it? The sheriff and the man who had called himself Atik locked eyes. The game, it seemed, was up. The sheriff sprang like a coiled spring over Prince John. He grabbed Adam by the back of the neck, slamming his head violently against the table. Gasps filled the air. Several men amongst the commoners took to their feet, but the crowd were too busy watching the commotion to pay them any notice. The sheriff pulled the blue silk that was wrapped around his suspect's head and thrust him under the nose of Sir Guy of Gisborne, who was still holding a chicken bone, dumbfounded.
Wake up, you drunken fool, and for once in your pathetic life be useful. Have you never seen this face before? The sheriff barked.
The whole room was spinning. Adam blinked. The knight's red face slowly came into focus. He saw the thunderbolt strike and the penny drop and a look of horrified realization overtake him. Sir Guy may have never seen the man's face unhooded, but there was no mistaking those storm grey eyes.
Robin! It's Robin Hood! He cried.
Adam had just enough sense to subtly raise his right hand, telling his band to hold, before his head hit the table again, and darkness filled his vision. Adam awoke in a small, dark cell on a stone slab masquerading as a bed, with only a straw pillow to cushion his throbbing head. A barred window let in a small gust of cool night air. In the corner, a fat monk sat on a little wooden stool, humming to himself. Adam tried to sit up, but the pain in his head was too great.
Don't worry about your head, said the monk. The pain'll be gone by lunchtime. I wouldn't count on it, Adam moaned. He would always be spared death, but never pain. I would. That's when you're scheduled to be executed, I'm afraid.
The monk walked over to Adam.
I'm Friar Tuck. I'm here to read you your last rites.
Last rites? Adam laughed. Do you have any idea how many times I've been read my last rites?
Well, you've made Prince John feel a mighty fool.
Adam slowly and painfully pulled himself into a sitting position. He looked at the friar. Do you believe in miracles, Father?
Well, I wouldn't be much of an holy man if I didn't,
Tuck said, trying to sound jovial. He always thought it best to give some kindness before the end. He'd answered this sort of question before, the soul-searching kind, so often initiated by those who knew deep down their time was up. But have you ever seen one up close? Adam looked Tuck dead in the eyes. Tuck said nothing. Well, you'll get your chance tomorrow. They'll call it the Nottingham Resurrection.
There's only one man can do that, said Tuck, fidgeting with his robes. There was something slightly eerie about this man's storm-like eyes.
You sure about that? Smiled Adam.
It doesn't matter either way. I'll still die tomorrow and be back in the castle the next day.
Back in castle? Cried Tuck. You truly are mad. Even if by some miracle you did survive tomorrow, why in heaven's name would you come back here?
I have my reasons, said Adam.
Now then, this is a strange situation. Why would the sheriff send an unarmed friar into a small cell with an unchained outlaw?
I think he were hoping you'd kill me. The monk laughed a little nervously. Neat way to tie up loose ends.
I don't make a habit of killing defenceless men. Or even armed men, if it comes to that. Adam winced again. He'd moved his head too quickly.
Well, won't he be disappointed? Tuck murmured. Would you like the rites, you know, just in case?
No, thank you. Why does the sheriff want you dead?
Adam asked.
Saw summit I shouldn't.
Those storm-grey eyes were back on him again. It was very unnerving.
What did you see?
The monk looked at his feet. He knew he shouldn't say. But then again, this man wouldn't be alive much longer.
Dead woman in a box. Only she weren't dead.
Adam's eyes flashed.
What? Oh, nowt, no need to worry yourself about it. You've got more pressing concerns.
But even as the friar spoke, Adam had staggered to his feet.
The female prisoner brought to the castle, you've seen her? What did she look like?
Adam's hands were now on the friar. Tuck wondered if he'd meant what he'd said about not liking to kill people.
I don't know, she was so badly burnt.
Badly burnt? But still alive? Healing? Adam asked.
He could feel his strength returning as adrenaline coursed through him.
Well, yes.
It's her. It has to be her. She's the only other person who could survive a burning.
Friar, you have to get me out of here. Adam fell to his knees. Please, I beg of you.
Well, I couldn't even if I wanted to. Tuck's eyes flicked towards the door, wondering if anyone would come if he screamed. He didn't think they would.
How did it feel when you saw that woman? Adam persisted.
Horrible, whispered the friar. I've seen suffering, but not like that.
Every moment that woman is kept in bondage, her suffering will increase. She is mine and I am hers.
Adam's eyes filled with tears.
You know this woman?
She is the world to me. And knowing where the friar's Achilles' heel would be, pleaded, if you are a man of God, you will help me. The friar stared at him. Please. She has been kept from me for so long. You saw how she was. We have suffered enough. The friar paused, deep in thought. Then, without another word, the friar frantically began to undress. Adam, catching on, unwound the layers of his blue silks. Two acts of generous disguise in one single day. People could be kind. A minute later, Tuck was lying on the stone bed in a sea of blue, and Adam stood in the monk's robes, hood raised over his face, the straw pillow substituting for the friar's paunch. They looked at one another.
I guess it'll have to do, said Tuck.
Thank you, Adam whispered. Tuck nodded.
Guard, I'm finished,
he yelled before quickly turning to face the wall and lying as still as possible. He heard a key in the lock and the door open.
Hold on, father,
came the gruff voice of the man at arms.
No trouble, then.
Tuck held his breath as he heard his impersonator give an affirmative mumble. The door locked behind him, and he was left all alone. Tuck felt something he'd not experienced since the moment he'd first laid eyes on the sheriff's damned box. Relief. He closed his eyes and fell into a blissfully guiltless sleep.
You've been listening to Evergreen, Chapter 18, written by Sam Russell and read by Catherine Russell. If you enjoyed this chapter, wherever you're listening, please subscribe, give us a rating and a review so we can get this story into more people's ears. And if you really enjoyed it and want to support this project, you can do so on our Ko-fi page. All details are available on our Twitter account, at Evergreen Book 1. The next chapter comes out on February the 14th. Thanks for listening.